Most podcasts don't make it past the 10th episode, and the ones that do are often terrible. The show you're about to listen to is just the worst.
Marvin, stop it! We're talking about The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy TV series! Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where it was my birthday, and we watched The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy 1981 BBC TV series. My name is Drew, and I need my co-host, who's not two-faced, but he is two-headed, Miles. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing okay. Boy, howdy. I feel like in watching this, I'd seen it before. And I know I haven't. But I feel like I have.
It's got a very specific vibe of stuff that you and I watched a lot of growing up from those reruns of a lot of sci-fi serials and stuff. There is something that felt very homey about watching this.
Not only that, but like I knew the theme song.
Yeah, but I also think there was a time, especially in the 90s, like this series was pretty well regarded as far as I knew. And I want to say that, like, I mean, I don't know if the library is playing it, but like I know I've heard that song somewhere. Maybe during an episode of SNL or Mad TV where they kind of parodied it or something. I have no idea.
It's just played in like some nerd spheres. Like I've heard it randomly in the background of something at Dragon Con for 20 years or something like that. This is my 20th Dragon Con this year, by the way. I don't know if I've mentioned that.
That's crazy.
Absolutely wild. This is not about Dragon Con. It's just coming up in a couple of weeks, and Miles and I are episode planning. But I went to my first Dragon Con in 2007 before I moved to Georgia later that year, and that also means that I've almost lived in Georgia for 20 years. So wild stuff. So yeah, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I had known a decent bit about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's one of those books that I've actually read more than twice. And I intend to read through as much of the series as I can this year because I turned The Answer to Life, the Universe, and Everything last week, which is why I thought this was going to be fitting. I intended to read the first book before my birthday, but stuff just got in the way. And what this TV series reminded me of is, one, that it started out as a radio series, that it was a radio series first, then a book, then a TV series, and they all happened kind of very close together. Like the radio series was 78, I think the book was 79 or 80, and the TV series was 81. The TV series uses, I think, every main cast member from the radio series back in their roles, their respective roles, and is weirdly closer to the radio series than it is the book that took place in between the two, with a couple of changes here and there. And what is wild to this is I feel, and a lot of this was, I think, recreated maybe shot for shot for the movie that I haven't seen in 20 years.
Yeah. So, it's been a while since I've seen the movie. I was always, pretty partial to it just because I liked the design work and I generally like a lot of the talent involved. Alan Rickman as Marvin is, S-tier casting. And I know you're not a big fan of Martin Freeman, but I thought he was fine in the role.
Yeah, look, my take on Martin Freeman has nothing to do with any of his performances. He just
and I 100% get that.
He just seems like a miserable, mean person in real life.
But I do love the casting of I can't remember what he currently goes by, but Mos Def as
Ford was very good. Yeah,
I liked him quite a bit, and Sam Rockwell. Like, beat for beat was Zaphod.
I'll watch Sam Rockwell in anything. Him is, so this is another thing about this, that when you read a book versus when you watch a thing, like, that character has always been Zaphod to me. Zaphod.
Not Zaphod.
But I'm pretty sure I need to start calling him Zaphod, because this is the British production that Douglas Adams was heavily involved in, and they call him Zaphod. They also call it a Babel fish, which I'm not so into that. What this whole thing tells me is how much of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that I remember, but also how little of it I remember. And that there are moments in there that are straight from the book as I remember it. Some of the fun wordplay, like going into hyperspace is like being drunk. What's wrong with being drunk? I don't know. Ask a glass of water, which is just such a great little play on words. And I love so much of that. But then there's also a bunch of stuff that's from this originally, from the TV show originally, that I don't know, a couple of things I don't think work well or play, or at least don't age well. So Miles, where do you want to begin? I guess I have to ask you, I the last time I think I read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was on this show during its run, and that probably would have been in the first couple of years.
It has been a long time since I have read the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series, because I went through all of them, and I think I've only read the series once. I think I've read the first book twice. And I've always enjoyed them. It's weird for me to say, oh, yeah, I'm a fan. Because, I mean, I would consider myself a fan because I do like them. But I'm not like some, I got to find all this, you know. I don't seek out Hitchhiker Guide stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But I do love that book. I love the series, the movie. And, you know, what's weird is I had always heard very good things about this miniseries, but never made the choice to watch it. And it always seemed around. I feel like I saw it like maybe in one of the sections at Blockbuster as a kid a lot, because that I've seen some of the artwork associated with this, and I'm like, oh yeah, that looks so familiar.
It's one of those things that, like Doctor Who, like a lot of the sort of off-kilter to us because we were raised in the Southeast United States, where some of this stuff just didn't happen. Like, it had a strong following for people that knew about it, and people that knew about it all kind of floated in the same circles. So, like, I remember seeing like people use Marvin's head as their forum avatar in 1998 or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Is that kind of thing. I first read this book when I was in middle school. I can't remember what year, but a friend of mine who had gotten, and when I say, you know, I say friend of mine, you know, this is the one friend I had that never had cable growing up. So he only had access to over the air TV if you watch TV at all. And one of the things you could get access to on over the air TV was PBS, which often aired stuff like this, like Doctor Who, like Mr. Bean, that sort of thing. And he was the friend who also introduced me to those things, as well as mm-hmm. the Red Green Show, that weird Canadian show that was kind of funny that I think they might still do. I don't know. But he got the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which was at the time, four book plus the fifth short story novelette, all in one big hardbound copy. And he lent it to me because I needed to read it. And I read that entire thing. And I will tell you, I loved the first book so much. And I don't really remember a lot of the other stories because it's been almost 30 years since I read it, which
for sure
that is the, I think, the first time I've ever used the 3-0 in talking about something, which yeah, I don't like that, Miles. I don't like that one bit. So
yeah, it's odd.
Yeah.
And I was so surprised when you brought this challenge forth, because one, I just didn't expect it. And you know, it's funny, I didn't think about the 42 of it all until you mentioned it.
I'm pretty sure I said it last week, but it's okay.
You might have. I did not register at all.
You were blown away by what a good idea it was.
It was a great idea. And it's interesting because, I mean, I talked to folks, especially when the first movie came out, and, you know, the movie did decent, but it's weird when you adapt work like this, because you're going to have a subset of people who are never going to be happy with it. Despite the fact that, like, if you watch that movie, it's a pretty decent adaptation of the work.
And honestly,
everything we saw in this 6-episode miniseries was touched on for the most part in the movie.
Yeah. And that's the thing that sort of shocks me, is that, like, it was a 6-episode radio show. I don't know how long those episodes were. It's a 6-episode TV series, which are like 30, 35-minute episodes. Mm-hmm. But the book is only the content of the first 4 episodes of the radio show and the TV show, the first book. And that is where it's like, I remember the first book very well, but the second they go off of that book, I'm like, what is happening here? And it's like, oh, wait, that was in the second book that you haven't read for 30 years and you just don't remember.
Yeah. And it's interesting because while this is called, I mean, and it should, because it's the name of the franchise, basically, but it's called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but this actually adapts The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and The Restaurant at the End of the Universe.
Yes, because at the time, supposedly, the only reason that The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy released when it did is because notable procrastinator Douglas Adams had taken so long to make the novel version that they basically said, stop with whatever sentence you're on right now and give us the manuscript to publish. And so the book just wasn't finished in comparison.
Which, you know, when you read it, you get that idea. Like
it's kind of notably has a pretty abrupt ending, and knowing that it would go right into a book not that long after this, and then of course the 3 more, and apparently, by the way, a 6th book that came out a few years ago that was not by Douglas Adams, obviously.
Yeah, it wasn't by Douglas Adams, and I mean, as anything like this, when you have a posthumous writer, this is with the Wheel of Time, this happened with Dune, you've got some people who are super, super into it, and some people who are not. I've largely heard that the 6th book is not bad and goes with Adam's wishes, because he wanted to write a 6th book because he felt that Mostly Harmless ended pretty depressingly. Which, I mean, yeah, it kind of did. I mean,
I don't remember what it even was about.
It ends with Ford, Trillian, Arthur, and then their kid waiting for the Vogons to blow up the Earth
again.
Which I always thought was kind of like, eh. Because when you watch this miniseries and you read those first 2 books, they kind of go so well. It feels like there is a finish, and even with this series, it seems like there's an open ended finish that is certainly like a characteristic of humor stories like this.
Yeah.
And I kind of love that. And it's not that I don't like the rest of the Hitchhiker's Guide series. I do think it gets a little long in the tooth and doesn't always work as the more it goes. Like, it's still, and it's never awful at all. But the trajectory and the momentum of fun that's had in the first book and a good chunk of the second does start to slow down.
Yeah.
As the series moves forward. It's never bad, but that first book is just it's lightning in a bottle.
For sure. I mean, the whole 42 thing is just the whole conceit of what the whole book is about is just so funny. And so much of that text, obviously, again, this is another thing that I didn't know about the series is that, yeah, there was the radio show that aired. And then there was a different version of the radio show that was released as an LP that had changes to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of those changes also made their way into both the book and the first TV series. And I'm going to be 100% honest. I looked, I could not find a definitive list that I could read easily to tell you what a lot of those changes are. But let's get into the TV series as it is. So it is 1981 on BBC Two is when it was released. And it basically covers the story of the first book and over the course of two episodes, the second book. obviously, mm-hmm. There are some cuts made to both of those things. You have Arthur Dent played here by an actor named Simon Jones that I tried to find if I knew him from anything else. And I don't think I do. Who is trying to stop his house from being demolished by a wrecking crew to make way for a highway bypass when his good friend Ford Prefect, who was totally from Guilford and not an alien from somewhere outside or from a planet near Beetlejuice, in this played by actor David Dixon. Again, I tried to find something else that I could remember him from, and I couldn't find anything, which is very, very odd. As Ford tells him that the planet itself is about to be destroyed for much the same reason, to make a hyperspace bypass. And they end up hitching a ride on the Vogon ship that just destroyed the planet and go on a whirlwind adventure with the Heart of Gold and its infinite improbability drive. And of course, Zaphod Beeblebrox, the part-time president of the galaxy.
Which doesn't come into play as much in this production.
Yes, that was definitely a thing in more in the book, and I'm sure in the radio show as well, because I bet the radio show did hour-longs. But I couldn't find that information, and also I didn't look. But yeah, Zaphod, who had stolen the Heart of Gold at its debut in order to go on an adventure because he's the president somehow. Boy, you never would have thought a guy like that could be elected president, huh?
The interesting thing to me is that I don't really mind some of the changes that are made. I mean, there are changes that are made in almost every version. I don't think the John Malkovich character exists in the book, right? From the 2005 film?
I don't know who the John Malkovich character is.
Huma Kuvala?
That character does exist, but I think it's in a later story.
Okay. Here it is. Well, he certainly only appeared in the 05 movie in terms of adaptations, it seems.
Huma Kuvala?
Yeah. So I wasn't really bothered by this, by like anything that ventured from what I had seen before or what I had read. I was very tickled by how much it seemed exactly had been adapted since then. You know, like everything with the very beginning of the story is almost verbatim.
Yeah,
to the book, and the same way that the 2005 film works.
Yeah, it was wild because it's like I'm watching the whole scene with Arthur lying down in front of the tractor or in front of the bulldozer, and just like it seems to play exactly the same way. It just feels the same. And one day I want to find a decent I'm sure I can find the LP version, but part of me wants to go back and see if anybody's got the original, you know, as it aired radio play, so I can listen to that and sort of...
I'm sure someone does.
Somebody's got to. In 2026, somebody's got to. But yeah, it's also very funny that this was 1981. So, and I can't remember. I think Miles and I were talking about this before we started recording. But yeah, in 1981, Star Wars was new. Like, yeah. This Star Trek The Next Generation was almost a decade later. It's we are talking about a very particular time in television history. Doctor Who had, the fourth Doctor had just ended his run, which is just
speaking of, and I understand that Adams did some writing for Who, but boy, does Ford Prefect feel like a doctor.
Ford feels a lot like a doctor. I mean, there's a lot of it, like, it's funny. They're and again, it's a BBC show. I'm sure that there are some shared production company people that worked on Doctor Who that were also working on this. I mean, heck, we haven't talked about Trillian yet. Trillian is played by an actress named Sandra Dickinson, who for a decent period of time was married to Peter Davison, the fifth Doctor, who was not yet the Doctor when the show aired. Or he had just started. I can't remember the specific one. The two of them would later go on to parent a woman named Georgia Moffat, who is now Georgia Tennant, married to David Tennant, the 10th Doctor. So Trillian, the actress who played Trillian, is David Tennant's mother-in-law, which is hilarious. There is a lot of Doctor Who DNA in this. Also, and not to jump all the way to one of the final episodes, but you remember the cow man in the restaurant at the end of the universe?
Yes.
Did you clock who played him?
I did not.
He was played by the fifth Doctor himself, Peter Davison.
I think I saw his name somewhere, so I was kind of curious where that was going to pop up. But I love that.
Yeah, it was great. That whole scene was I don't remember that scene from the book, but again, I haven't read Restaurant at the End of the Universe in a long time.
I feel like that was a thing.
Yeah, it was just like, would you rather eat something that has no choice in its survival or not? Like, it's a very, like, I don't know whether it's a pro-vegetarian message or not, but it weirdly has the opposite reaction. This creature wants to be eaten, and therefore it makes Arthur extremely uncomfortable with eating it, which seems very, very funny.
And flat out judges him for getting a green salad.
Yeah. Like, oh, my rump is quite good. I've been force feeding myself and all this stuff.
Yeah. It's like... It's hard to talk about, like, I mean, one thing that I really appreciate, and I mean, if you're a fan of older science fiction, especially older science fiction that doesn't have a budget, because this is very much a BBC TV production of the time. And of the time, their budgets were very, very small. If you've seen any old classic Doctor Who, Tom Baker era, especially, like, you know, I mean, this is they're working with slightly better than Star Trek sets.
Yeah. And the video transfer in, like, the best quality that you can buy right now, because this is available for sale. I spent $10 on it. It is a VHS rip that has video artifacting and weird audio miscues and stuff that could only come from copying from a fully analog source.
I don't think mine was a VHS origin source. Because it has been put on other formats. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the set production, which I found overall, like, really, really fun.
Yeah. Some of, like, I don't like the Heart of Gold is it's just a lot of white walls that have just sort of grid texture to it. But I didn't love the feel of that, because it kind of felt like weirdly plain. But like when they're on the Vogon ship, the Vogon ship had some cool things, like these Yeah, don't see me coughing and don't vamp for me, bro. Appreciate that.
Oh, sorry. I thought you wanted me to wait.
Had like these cool like I don't really like it's this sort of this mesh like crate walls that would open into different things, and that was mm-hmm. really cool when they finally get to Magrathea and you go to Slarty Bartfast's sort of design office. That was just sort of a fun thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, I always appreciate where it feels like someone made something from what they had, if that makes any sense. Like, hey, this is what we've got. We got to make something out of it. And they often pull something off. And sometimes, yes, this looks like a cheap B-movie production. It's a TV show for the BBC in 1981. This is not the BBC of now by any stretch, or the BBC of 2005 when Doctor Who relaunched. Like, yeah. This is, I mean, very, very low budget, very practical effects, and then very like any other effects are so rudimentary that it's just charming. And the playfulness of the narration, which is based off the prose of Douglas Adams, actually leans itself to it.
Yeah.
Because there's a wryness that, like, it knows what it is in that sense. And so it knows that it doesn't have the money. It knows it doesn't have the Hollywood production values. But it does have some really fun ideas and some, like, it's a good example of how a great script is bulletproof.
It gets away with a lot of it based on charm, because there is a lot of charm that comes through yeah. in this.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that, like, I mean, some characters do get undercooked. I think Zaphod and Trillium both are, they feel like minor characters in this instance, even though they're major characters.
They do. However, we do need to talk about Zaphod's look, because Zaphod has two arms and three heads. This is a known thing in the books. This is a known thing in the radio show. And they get away with it in a different way in the movie in 2004, because I feel like they didn't want to. And I don't actually love how they did it in that movie. But this,
I didn't mind it.
I just it felt like it felt like they didn't want to go the whole do the real thing. But in this one, he's got the second head, the paper mache head on the side of him. But again, it moves slightly. It kind of tilts and turns, and its mouth moves a little bit. And yes, it looks awful. It looks so bad. But it also looks pretty good. Like, it looks way better than you would expect it to in 1981. But it ain't, you know,
mm-hmm.
it ain't like a like, you can tell what it's made of. It's pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's some moments where, like, I mean, I kind of white noised it out of my. Like, I just, like, all right, he's got two heads, and just kind of just focused on the one that's an actual actor. But when you do look at it, you do see there's a little bit of an animatronic. Sometimes it breathes. Sometimes it moves its eyes a little bit.
Its mouth moves. Barely, but it does.
which is, I mean, it's charming. but, yeah, it's... Yeah, I don't know. It's...
There are a number of aliens in this, but a lot mm-hmm. of them are Star Trek style, just human looking, not humans. The Vogons, however, had kind of a look to them. What'd you think about the Vogon look?
And here's the problem with some of the aliens that they do depict, because they don't have any money, and it's very clear they don't have any money. They do tend to look like variety show makeup extravaganzas, and it's hard when that happens, because sometimes it feels like there's not even a very specific design in place. Like, it's just like, oh, we just put a bunch of green on this guy and kind of gussied his mouth, his face up a little bit.
And they got the whole nose prosthetic thing.
Yeah, they got the nose thing, but like, it's just not. It's like, if I'm being truthful, I think the designs are a little flat. They're not clean, I guess is the way I want to say it. But there is a scruffiness to them that does make it charming.
Of them all, I think that the Vogons look the best. And I think they've spent maybe the most time on them because they are probably the most important aliens in the story. I the ship designs for a lot of the stuff I thought was kind of interesting. A lot of very boxy, blocky things. A lot of really, really bad green screen edges on things, which is really good. But yeah. What are some standout moments that you laughed very hard at?
I'm trying to think, because it was always like some of the narration. Like, one of my favorite bits has always been the bit about the dolphins leaving Earth. And specifically the line of like, humans always felt that they were most intelligent because all the dolphins did was muck around and play all day. Conversely, the dolphins felt they were more intelligent for the very same reason. It's always been one of my favorite bits in this. It's hard to say because this is so like kind of true to the book in so many ways that like they're all moments from the book that were brought to life, you know?
Yeah.
So like if I talk about like how much fun the deep thought situation is, it's great, but it's also, it's in the movie, it's in the book. Like there's not a whole lot that the show itself does that I didn't already love. And that is not a diss. It's just, I'm trying to think of something that like caught me off guard where I was like cracking up in the way that they did it. Did you have something in particular?
Well, I mentioned the turn of phrase when they go into hyperspace for the first time, and Ford's like, it's quite like being drunk, and Arthur says, what's wrong with being what's wrong with being drunk? I've been drunk. And Ford just says, we'll ask a glass of water, just because it's just like, it's one of those things that just, it's a spin on a phrase. It's a spin on a very common thing that just has the different definition for what it is. And I love the stuff like that where they really turn it around. I of course also love a lot of the narration stuff when they're talking about, all the names for things like the Blagger Beast of Crawl, or, a lot of these just sort of weird, weird, crazy things. I did also love every time that Zaphod would have a some sort of exclamation like space cookies. It's so weird that he said space cookies, but I thought I just thought it was funny. It was such a weird thing. It was because those are the things that are closest to the stuff that we're familiar with. Like that's really the big thing, which I guess leads me to my other question. Is there anything in this version that didn't really land for you? That landed like a bowl of petunias.
Yes. Actually, the improbability drive does not translate as well in this version that it does in the book or the movie.
I agree. The Ford as a penguin bit was the problem with a lot of this stuff is that it just goes on too long. I have always loved when the improbability drive turns the missiles into a bowl of petunias and a slightly confused whale.
Mm-hmm.
But this one had a whole long scene of the whale falling to Earth. And I honestly can't remember if this is in the book. But if it is, I sped through reading it because it took forever and the payoff just wasn't that great to me. And that's really kind of a thing for a lot of this stuff. If it was, it's just the stuff that, like, at the time, it probably would have been funny because we'd never seen it before. But in the 30 years since, 40 years since, almost 50 years since, we have seen a lot of stuff like this. That, like, I think the concept of Marvin the Paranoid Android is very good, but every scene he was in just kind of went on a little too long for that bit for me.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, a one-liner is great, but continuing that over and over and over again was a little much.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and that's really my only problem with this series is, like, some of it, like, I think some people will have a problem with the dry humor, but I mean, if that's a problem, then I don't think Hitchhiker's Guide's for you in the first place. But this is probably some of the most digestible of that style of humor. I think that the Vogon poetry scene didn't work as well for me as well. For the very same reason, it just kind of goes on a little bit too long,
yeah,
and kind of undercuts the fun of the scene. And that's really the one of the harshest things I can say about this is it's not that it's ever really bad. It's just that sometimes it just picked the wrong moment and overstayed its welcome. I honestly think you probably could have cut a few minutes from each episode, if I'm being perfectly honest.
I mean, but again, we're talking about this in more than 40 years.
I know everything was different then in terms of commercials and license, all that stuff was different and in a different country. So of course it's going to be, you know, a little bit skewed. I have a hard time, like, kind of pointing out anything that I just flat out didn't like. I thought the cast was generally really good.
I loved both Arthur and Ford and the way they played off of each other.
Yeah, when I said that, like, yeah, he's a little too Doctor Who, that's just me kind of having a little bit of a criticism. Ford is played to perfection. I actively loved the job done by
David Dixon.
I thought he was kind of my standout of the entire thing.
Yeah, I fully agree. I really, really loved the way that he played it. But again, I also loved that Arthur, as sort of this down on this luck dude, kind of going through it with everybody, kind of worked really well too. Sort of, I mean, it's not exactly a straight man, funny man comedy duo, because they each have their moments of kind of both of that, but the two of them together really, really worked well. And again, even when they're apart, I think Simon Jones as Arthur Dent, when he is with Slarty Bartfast learning all of the different stuff about what's going on, like, I just thought it worked. I do wish we got more of Trillian and Zaphod. Trillian especially, she just sort of was there and said some things that, because they set her up as being a super genius, like, I don't know, there just wasn't a lot to.
Yeah, no, I did mention, you know, not loving that both Zaphod and Trillian were undercooked, but Trillian especially, like, she is, I mean, I hate to say it, and this is no disrespect to the actress at all, but she's virtually there for window dressing. Like, you are told that Arthur met her at a party and kind of struck out, but we don't even get that far. In this version, it makes it look like Arthur was talking to her and then she just disappears.
Yeah.
And which in most versions, that's not exactly what happened, but close to it. But they just give her nothing to do. We are told that she's extremely intelligent and that she's got, like, all these degrees and seems perfectly suited for space travel. Like, she is completely acclimated, and so I think it's one of the biggest failings is all these moments where they overstayed their welcome. They could have done something to give Trillian anything to do.
Yeah, and there is a, you know, and it's also, I think, I because we'd both read the book and we know there's more in the book with her, that's where it kind of kind of hit a little differently, that I know that there's more for her to do. We just didn't get to see it. And, you know, they left the series open-ended enough that they could have done another one, but they never did, which was interesting. They did eventually go back and do more radio series, which I didn't know they had done. But that, I think, all happened after, like between Douglas Adams passing and the movie coming out.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I guess they did do a second series in 1978 to 1980, but I don't know what the plot of that is. I think maybe that was some of what went, again, maybe next year, maybe the next time somebody turns 42, we'll listen to the radio series and see what we think about that. Because I would like to do that one day. This has only made me more curious about the different versions, because apparently, of all the ones that Douglas Adams was involved in, he made some drastic changes to fit the medium, which is great. I love that. So there's stuff happens in much the same way in the radio show and the books and the TV series, but especially in the radio show and the books, stuff happens, but it happens in drastically different orders, or different characters show up at different times, to the point where when they came back in 2004 to come up with a new radio show, they just had to write off the fact that they're basing it off of more of the books and not the fact that, you know, stuff just happened differently, which I think it's funny. I think it's interesting. And again, I wish I had a list of all of these things that I could say out loud right here, but I don't. But that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, This is such a difficult project to talk about, and Drew and I were kind of going back and forth because we've also both started Yakuza Kiwami 2 despite saying that we weren't going to, and so that's all I've been really thinking about. I haven't been processing a lot, and it's interesting because I do think Hitchhiker's Guide is one of the great sci-fi novels. It's one of the great comedic satire novels. I think it's a must read. I think any iteration that you interact with, whether it be the original book, whether it be this miniseries, whether it be the movie, I really can't say much about the audio production, but I'm assuming it's probably on par as well. I don't think you can go wrong in how you consume The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And I know some people will kind of balk at that, because I know, like I said, people had some problems with the 05 movie. It really is a pretty faithful adaptation, especially compared to most Hollywood adaptations.
And also, especially considering, like I just said, it's not like all the versions were the same. There were some pretty drastic differences between a lot of the major versions of this story, depending on how it was told. So it's like, I don't know. You know, it's like, what are you going to do? So with that said, I guess the last thing I want to say is just sort of the thing that really stuck out to me that didn't stick out to me when I was reading this book 30 years ago or 10 years ago or the other time I read it, is that this TV series feels decidedly more of the era than I remember the book being. And I think it's because there is so much stuff of like a telephone cleaner to make sure that the telephones are cleaned. Like so many things that were specific to technology of the time that we didn't really think about there not being they don't predict the internet. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy book is not even really an iPad. It's like a gigantic thick thing with a screen that's like 2x3.
It's one of those things that it never gets explained how you interact with it, and that's fine.
Yeah.
It's the same in almost every iteration of this novel, is that like it's there. We don't know exactly how it works, and that's okay.
Don't panic.
Yeah. basically. Yeah. Don't panic.
So with that said, I do think that this, I mean, it's six episodes. It'll take you a couple of hours. I think this is really worth seeing, especially if you like the book and have never seen it. I know that we are kind of in rarefied air when it comes to some of the stuff that we do that, you know, it's weird that it took us this long to get to some of this stuff, but I'm glad to finally have seen it because it was so influential for so many people that are kind of, I like to think that they're more the set of nerds that are just slightly older than us. Like some of the Gen X nerds really, really loved this, and we're obviously coming to it a bit late, even though we read the book. I don't know. I just, there was something charming about it that I will probably revisit some of the scenes from this in the future. And I kind of, because it was so good, I kind of want to check out the audio stuff just so that I can hear more of these performers putting this stuff in.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think this is a great time. Like you said, there's just no wrong way. And I think if you are into Hitchhiker's Guide, this is a treat. And I found this entire thing, I think what makes it so charming, and I feel like it's very much in the spirit of Adams, is like the soul of Hitchhiker's Guide is completely intact in this production. And I think that is what gets communicated best. And the fact that everyone seems to be on the same page, even if there are problems with this, you know, script or whatever, like in terms of like, oh, well, so-and-so doesn't get X amount of time. We don't get to, you know, experience Zaphod and Trillian as much in terms of their actual character. But I think it still gets the meat and potatoes of what makes Hitchhiker's Guide special. And I mean, I'm still impressed that in 1991, they got something like this as good as they got.
Yeah. Definitely. So that is going to wrap it up for our discussion on the 1981 Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy TV series. So next week, oh man, we're back to Mel Brooks, the 100-year-old man. We love you. Even if what you release isn't the most popular thing in the world, because we are going to cover his last theatrical director mm-hmm. movie, which is mm-hmm. wild because it came out in the 1990s, 1995, mm-hmm. one that I have never seen, that my Mel Brooks loving wife has only ever seen once 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and that Miles loves and has seen repeatedly, Dracula Dead and Loving It.
Yeah. I mean, Dracula Dead and Loving It is not a popular film amongst Mel Brooks fans, not a popular film amongst most people, but I saw this when I was 11 in theaters. It was probably the first Dracula thing I got to see in the movie theaters because I was far too young to be taken to see Bram Stoker's Dracula when it came out in 1992 or one, whenever that came out. I'm a huge fan of this. I'm a big Leslie Nielsen fan, and I'm a big fan. I was always a big fan of his comedic term, obviously, with The Naked Gun and Airplane and everything. Obviously, that gave us more and more diminishing returns as his career went forward. But I'm a big fan. I predict that I will probably be defending this movie a bit next week. But I hope you enjoy it. Like, it's a silly movie.
I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to experience it because I only know it based on
its reputation,
based on the reputation. But
yeah,
did I tell you
there's an anecdote of Mel Brooks like yelling at Roger Ebert for his review?
Did I tell you that I came across a weird Leslie Nielsen movie on Amazon a month ago? 2001, A Space Travesty.
I know I've heard of it. I don't think I ever saw it.
It's trying to be Naked Gun, but not Naked Gun. Mm. Because he's a detective. But it's like it's name checking a lot of things, including, I believe, Osama bin Laden, which is wild because it came out in the year 2000.
It's so weird.
Yeah, it's odd. It's odd. Yeah, it was also so bad. We turned it off after about 8 minutes. It was really,
I'm looking at the DVD cover, and yeah, it looks pretty awful.
Yeah. But anyway, we're not talking about that, at least not this month. Maybe next month. We'll see. But next week, we're going to be our final week of talking about Mel, Dracula, Dead and Loving It. So now, in the meantime, what do you do next? Well, if you want to listen to more of this show, you can find us at themoreyounerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode of this show. You can go on to social media and find us just about everywhere at either /themoreyounerd or @themoreyounerd. And you can email us, themoreyounerd@gmail.com. That's themoreyounerd@gmail.com. You can also check us out at the Cosmic Crit podcast. What's Cosmic Crit, you ask? Well, it's the podcast where me and Miles play tabletop role-playing games with all of our friends, specifically the game Starfinder by Paizo. It's like D&D, but in space. It's very cool. And go to cosmiccrit.com and join the Cosmic Crit Discord, where you can find your own tabletop role-playing games to play, especially because CritterCon is coming up, where you can go and we're going to be doing all sorts of crazy things for CritterCon. Lots of games going on. Or, of course, you can just talk to me and Miles all day while we are bored at work. So with that said, we're going to end the show as we always do with a rousing nerd out.
Tuner for y'all.
Bye.